Real independence continues. Tens of thousands of dollars of KPFK's crucial operating expenses have still not been paid by the Pacifica Foundation. We were able to negotiate until January 18th an extension with the electric company to pay our bills. But that obligation has not been fulfilled by Pacifica. Our new transmitter still cannot be installed because Pacifica has not released the necessary funding, and we are forced to transmit at one-quarter power. And for the first time in our history, KPFK's national board continues to usurp our local programming authority. We call upon you to continue supporting us in our quest to restore our economic and editorial independence. Please go to friendsofkpfk.org and send a message to the Pacifica board members, telling them you want KPFK to directly manage the funding provided by you, the listener sponsors, and that you want Pacifica board to restore KPFK's full programming authority. Remember, that website is friendsofkpfk.org. Thanks for your continued support.
From now until 6 o'clock, we will bring you drama and literature,
poetry and commentary,
readings and interviews,
old radio, science fiction, and new consciousness programs.
And here is your host,
faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's
Roy of Hollywood.
Good morning, good evening, and good day. This is your host, producer, and engineer, Roy of Hollywood, welcoming you again to Something's Happening. We'll be here till 6 o'clock a.m. with Dynamite Radio for Night People. Tonight's the night, once or twice a year, we get to have Shinzen Young on live. Shinzen, our regular live guy on Thursday night for so many years. And then around 4:15, we have, ready to go, Caroline Casey's winter solstice ceremony rant, lecture ritual, seminar, whatever she calls it. It's called Scheherazade Saves the World. And that'll be at 4:15 to 6 o'clock. Scheherazade will save the world. Well, I feel like the world has been saved, and I just can't tell you how. Well, we're going to dedicate the first half hour to a crucial interview in this historic moment in KPFK history and Pacifica history with the chairman of the local board, otherwise known as the enemy of the people, David Adelson. David?
Hi, Roy. How you doing?
Oh, I tell you, as I said, I haven't felt this way since Nixon resigned.
It's pretty incredible after all this time. It is pretty incredible. That message that they've been running every hour on the hour is an extraordinary message. One of the striking things is that at a place where people have been huffing around about the importance of responsible journalism for some time, they keep making claims about encroachment on their editorial freedom and yet never give an example of it. They don't give any evidence of it.
What is the encroachment on our editorial freedom?
Well, let me take a quick step back and say that one of the reasons the management is up in arms is at KPFK is up in arms is because there's recently been a settlement to four lawsuits that were pending against Pacifica for some time, more than a couple of years. And the staff has known about these lawsuits the whole time. They've known about the lockout of the staff at KPFA. They've known about the $500,000 that It took the Joint Legislative Audit Committee of the state of California to find out they spent on armed security guards and on PR firms at the time. They've known that Pacifica had taken control of their check writing privileges in 1995 and hadn't been paying their bills for months. In fact, they knew, as you know, before the prior fund drive, that Pacifica had not been paying their operating expenses, some of their expenses, that some of their credit cards were maxed out, and people were claiming they couldn't even buy paper. So all that's been known for a very long time. It's only the settlement in the last 4 weeks leading to the seating of a new national board in the last 2 weeks that had been fighting the prior administration because of all its abuses. It's only since that happened that they've decided to go on the air round the clock and make claims about the fact that Pacifica seized their money. And the reason they are doing that is because they would like to confuse the listeners and make listeners associate the abuses of the prior board with the current board, to which I believe management is hostile. Now that brings us to the encroachment.
I must add, the hardest thing that I've ever had to do in my 25 years on the air is to play these damned cards, these damned misleading announcements, and not say anything. But I can now because the gag rule is
lifted. And that is exactly the encroachment on their editorial freedom. The new board, one of the first things it did was pass a series of motions. Now, the settlement to the lawsuit required that the passing of any motion on the new board, which is composed of five members of the prior board defendants, the people being sued, five members of the board plaintiffs, which were people who were suing the foundation itself because the foundation was illegally conducting its business, refusing to allow directors to see financial records, which is illegal, illegally changing their bylaws.
Closing meetings for about the last 10 years.
And
a hostile corporate-like takeover of the national board has been going on for about, actually, since Alan Fong. That was when I smelled the rat, when Alan Fong had to leave as manager.
Well, you got to be careful. When you say corporate-like takeover, what we're really talking about is an internal takeover of the foundation, not something like Monsanto buying it out, but a group of people who recognized that the transmitters were worth $500 million and that politically they were incredibly valuable resources, and who argued that those transmitters were being wasted and that massive changes had to take place without the consent of the listeners in order to raise money and raise ratings.
But behind closed doors with no mention on the air about any of it due to the gag rule.
Yeah, and people who did try to mention it were permanently banned from the station. And that happened. That's one of the ways I found out about this in 1996 when Ron Wilkins on his Continent to Continent program had a number of black and brown programmers on discussing the treatment of people of color, broadcasters of color on the air at Pacifica, and their removals from the air when he was cut off in mid-program by the general manager. And the next day a notice went up in the station saying that not only were people not allowed to discuss internal station policy on the air, but they weren't allowed to announce events in the community at which it would be discussed. That's a big change from when you guys used to have a folio that told people all kinds of things that was going on. But as you know, there's always been an issue and a reluctance at the station to talk about station policy on the air, and it gets cloaked in this language of, well, we don't want to discuss personnel matters or dirty laundry, by which you mean, well,
it's
this
a
person long did
held
this
Pacifica
that
tradition that we don't do have the in the air.
But let me get to this resolution.
She's wrong, which is a lie.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the resolution that the board passed, the last group of five members on the board are members chosen by each of the local advisory boards acting through their chair. Now, the settlement agreement requires the new board that's constituted in this 5-5-5 way to get a two-thirds majority on any vote for it to pass, or a simple majority that includes at least one person from each group. And failing that, if it gets a simple majority, it goes to the judge who's overseeing the case, and he rules on whether he sustains it or vetoes it. And basically, he made it clear in the course of legal negotiations that gridlock was the worst thing that could happen to Pacifica at this juncture. And essentially, it's just a safeguard against abuses, which, for example, retaliatory purges, because there were so many people removed. As you know, over 60 programs were removed around 1995 in this transformation of the station, and over 100 to 150 people have left. In any case, the one of the first resolutions this new board passed was a resolution lifting the gag rule with controls on abuse. That was the exact terminology of it. And it didn't get the two-thirds majority or the balanced majority, but it did get a majority, and we just found out today that the judge sustained it. So I'd like to read it for your listeners. Is that okay?
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
Okay. It says, whereas there have been a growing number of programmers taken off the air after their expression of support for particular views relating to the recently settled lawsuits involving Pacifica, whereas some current Pacifica programmers have been constrained by the gag rule from expressing their views regarding these same controversies at Pacifica, whereas there has been an uneven application of said gag rule, and whereas varied political views regarding the litigation, settlement, and underlying issues at Pacifica warrant discussion in a respectful, open, and fair-minded manner, therefore, it is hereby resolved that the gag rule is immediately eliminated. Further, it is hereby resolved that in order to provide protection from abuse of the air and to protect against the unfair removal from air of programmers, the following system is to be implemented. The effect is to freeze programming changes subject to a review process. For the period of time until the conclusion of the first in-person interim Pacifica National Board meeting, which incidentally is to occur this weekend in New York City and should be webcast live, no programmer may be taken off the air except by the following process. When a station manager, the executive director, or an interim Pacifica National Board member asserts that a programmer is abusing the air or otherwise should be removed, the complaint is to first go to the executive director because she supervises the station managers. If the ED's decision is not satisfactory, then it may be appealed to the Program Review Committee. If a programmer is found by three of the four members of the Programmer Review Committee, which is a committee of four interim Pacifica National Board members, to have been abusing the air, they may be sanctioned up to and including being taken off the air until the conclusion of the first in-person interim Pacifica National Board meeting. It's intended that the executive director and members of the Programmer Review Committee shall remain available by telephone in order this process may be used within hours so these disputes may be quickly resolved. Further, and here's the encroachment on so that was one encroachment on their programming freedom. Here's the other one. Further, the IPNB mandates each station, in conjunction with the local advisory board and Signal Area National Board reps, to initiate a program of at least 3 hours during drive time for an organized on-air discussion of the settlement agreement, which would include those who are critical of the settlement as well as those who support it. Such a show could be moderated by a neutral third party and could include time for listeners to call in and make comments or ask questions. Listeners should be informed of websites where they can read the settlement agreement. Links to such websites ought to be promptly installed at each station site, LAB's website, and on the Pacifica.org website homepage. These links would lead to sites that contain information about Pacifica and the recent controversies, as well as where people think Pacifica should be headed, etc. There should be links to the local LAB website, as well as to local listener groups. So that's the encroachment. We're encroaching on the management's freedom, local programming freedom, by telling them that they have to tell their listeners what's been happening at the institution to which they give their money. And that is apparently too outrageous for them to manage.
There's another outrageous encroachment.
Oh, the return of democracy now. Out of the air. But that's different because they were claiming that they have never in history been told by National what to do. But in fact, you, if I recall, received a memorandum from your management team in the fall telling you you could not air Democracy Now! Even though it was being produced and even though KPFA was airing it because Pacifica National has authority, it's a national program, and they have authority over its airing on the local station. So they were using Pacifica National's authority over the airing of national programming in the fall to keep Democracy Now! Off your air.
That's
so
right,
that can't be what they're talking about when they're talking about encroachment now.
When Amy was taken off the air, our air, and it became apparent that she wasn't going to come on right away, I started playing Democracy Now! At 5 to 6 a.m. and from the previous day, the previous day's Democracy Now! And then I was given a memo from the then National Program Director, Stephen Yazgo, who saying that we couldn't play Democracy Now. We didn't have permission or something. So then what I did, I figured, well, they don't own Amy Goodman and they don't own her work, so they must own the title Democracy Now. So I then took the program and laboriously eliminated, edited it, dubbed it onto Reel, and edited all references to the name Democracy Now, and I called it the Amy Goodman Show. And then I was directed that I couldn't play that either. So that was a local.
So it's not really true that that's not, can't be the historic encroachment.
But Amy is back. Amy's back at 6, not yet at 9.
That's true. But, you know, there's an upcoming interim national board meeting, and I suspect that by Monday we'll have a new executive director. And at that point, I suspect that listeners will start hearing Amy at 9. I know they're going to hear a discussion of this ridiculous cart that's been airing. And one of the things that's so striking to me is that people who have been making claims of being superior journalists are willing to read this, and it's immediately refutable. And as you know, they don't give any facts. They talk about, for example, their $800,000 transmitter project, but they don't say that much of that has been paid. We don't know. The foundation finances are a wreck and have been for some time.
For years and years.
For years and years.
And these cards should have been played years ago, and they could have joined Juan Gonzalez and the Pacifica Campaign and Lynn Gary and Radio for All and the Save Pacifica people and stopped these people from their destructive tyrannical tactics before they did any harm.
Well, I think the fact of the matter is they're hostile to people who wanted to open the question up of how should the community radio station function, who should have a say in it. And that leads me to the next point, which is the lawsuit settlements, as you know, mandate that within a year, for the first time in Pacifica's history, listener sponsors are going to get to elect the local board.
So they're Democratic.
Yeah. Now, at KPFA, they've been doing that for over a year. But one of the key questions is, how are we going to have the conversation with and involve listeners who have been having mainly a passive relationship to the station, a cultivated passive relationship to the station, i.e., we broadcast, you listen, send in money, to become involved enough to protect the station against this kind of thing in the future? And I was hoping maybe you could open up the phones and we could take advantage of the lifting of the gag rule to hear from people.
Okay, well, we can do that right now if you have suggestions or
I have
criticisms.
No suggestions.
I mean, I'm telling the listeners, so you can call at 818-985-2711, 818-985-2711. I'm sorry, that's 988. I'm so excited. 985 KPFK, 818-985-5735. Now, I guess nobody's interested because there's only 11 lines lit, David. Now, the first thing this new board has done, besides being accused of spending all the money in 2 weeks, you know, but this god-awful, stupid announcement sounding terribly technologically unacceptable announcement by Marion Barry that we were told to play every 2 hours.
Oh,
and
really? I haven't heard that one. That's extraordinary.
Oh.
So a national board member is being broadcast from, I mean, that's the point. Management is on the side of the prior defendants, the people who locked the staff out of Berkeley.
That's Marion Barry's
own. $500,000 on armed guards and PR firms.
$50,000 for installing TV cameras, security TV cameras throughout WBAI, where Amy
right.
was. So Amy got Halloween masks that she wore, and some of her people, because they were on closed circuit TV being observed by the manager. Armed guards taking over KPFA.
That's for your listeners. That was July of 1999. It was covered in the New York Times, it was actually in the L.A. Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, lots of the AP, NPR did a piece. But if I recall,
I did a piece.
It wasn't on KPFK, was it?
On Something's Happening, it was. We did have a documentary, and we had the State Assembly hearings that I broadcast, for which I was roundly yelled and screamed at and denounced by our program director at the time, Kathy Lowe. She came in. What business do you have?
You can't play. Now, one thing we really shouldn't do. I mean, Well, let's leave that alone.
Let's answer some
we
call.
Should, let's not personalize this right now. I mean, yeah, there were lots of folks involved in this. But
I'm sorry. I just don't like being yelled at by somebody who never produced a program telling me how to program.
I understand.
And that's what's been going on. We got a lot of calls, and we don't have very much time.
Let's get to them then.
Okay. Go ahead, caller. Hello.
Yeah, Roy, you know, back in 1997, a group of us in the PSUGA Accountability Committee wrote a proposed bylaws for KPFK and other Pacifica stations, which is on the website pacfolio.org.
PACFOLIO.org. PACFOLIO. PACFOLIO.org.
And the proposed bylaws, it takes about an hour to read, but it called for a listener elected. Labs. It wanted
lab
to democratize
local advisory
the stations,
board.
And it was given to both the national board members, the station management, the local board members at the time who were in cahoots with these people that wanted to corporize Pacifica. We're not telling the listeners what was going on, and we really encourage people to read these proposed bylaws, to take interest in the station, a serious interest, democratize the station. Take responsibility for the station and turn this corporate the attempt at the corporate takeover around, so that the station can once again be a free speech outlet and not serve the interests of other forces that don't want peace in the world.
Thank you.
I just want to say one thing. One of the things that I think is going to be most important in the next few weeks and months is to be really specific in our use of language, and so to be as descriptive of events as we can be, because one of the things I noticed is that both sides use the same language. Like everybody claims, oh, we're fighting for the mission, or we want local control. That was one of the things that was discussed by the by the reform movement, because in 1994, the National Board ruled that there'd be these vast changes at all the stations. At their Radio for All website, there's a memorandum called the My Way or the Highway memo that talks about the mandating of the managers to reconfigure the programming. And they said that, quote, we were mindful that this would unfortunately inconvenience, if not distress, some staff, board, and audience members. It'll mean that there'll be many alterations to current and longstanding practices at the station, including the elimination of aspects of the traditional program format, repositioning of others, et cetera. So the point is that everybody uses the same language, and it's incumbent actually on your listeners, whenever they're hearing this discussed, to ask themselves, wait a sec, what do they mean by that? Are they being specific? Are they giving me evidence of what they're saying? And then are they allowing enough time to be challenged on whatever it is they're saying so I can trust they're telling the truth? Because I'll tell you, there's been an awful lot of propagandizing and manipulation of perception about this struggle. And it's really incumbent on the listeners to defend themselves against spin.
Okay, hello, caller.
Hello, can you hear me?
Fast, yes.
Okay, David, can you, this is Sasha, can you give people instructions on the some of the other various listservs like Free KPFK? Just give that address out.
You know, I don't know how to get it. I'm on the Free KPFK list, but I don't know how to get it.
Okay, well, I believe...
If you go to what
Yahoo Groups. If you go to Yahoo Groups, you can sign in as a member and then join any of the other groups there. So it's freekpfk@yahoogroups.com.
And you'll get 9,000 emails an hour.
Right.
Yeah, and you can also go to www.fpnn.org, which is a website of the Free Pacifica Neighborhood Network, which is a local organizing effort of neighborhood chapters of listeners around the city. I think there are about 15 chapters now. The website is still in its infancy, but the organization is not. And you don't have to join that organization if you don't want. It's going to be important for everybody to be getting together face-to-face with each other as this thing goes forward to talk about the renovation of the station.
And just one other thing. Although we have not yet, you know, completely democratized, I put out the idea, well, let's just think up some nominations and... among them, Roy, is your name. You've been nominated to be our general manager, even if at least for the interim your name is mentioned.
I'd probably be the worst manager in the history of the station.
I'm sure everyone loves you so much that we'd put up with you for quite a long time.
Well, have everybody read up on the Peter Principle.
Plus, Roy, don't you sleep during the day?
I sleep during the day, yes.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay, thanks. I'm a longtime contributor to KPFK and a dedicated fan of the of your show, Roy. And so when these announcements started going out on the air, it became very troubling to me. And so I took some time to go to the different websites. And first, what I would say is that the issues, that is to say, both sides of the issues here, still don't seem to be coming through clear enough for me as a listener and supporter to truly understand. And secondly, you know, I listen to KPFK enough so that I feel that it's almost a family here, and it's hard for me to believe that the staff that seem to be behind this dissent could be just off the wall or out of their minds. That is to say, there seems to be something behind their actions, and so I'm not hearing from Mr. Adelson, and neither am I hearing from the staff at KPFK a real objective analysis of the issues. As an example, Mark Cooper raised a bunch of issues about the lawsuits and the damage they've done to Pacifica, and I quite frankly didn't get a clear answer from Mr. Adelson as to some of the issues about the funds for KPFK versus funds for the lawsuits. And so...
Okay, could you, if you pose a clear question, I'll give you as clear an answer as
sure,
I can.
Sure, I feel like Mark Cooper now, but a clear question would be, did you, Mr. Adelson, encourage donations go into an escrow fund instead of going directly to KPFK?
No, never.
So that's an outright lie on the part of the KPFK staff.
I was actually very, very careful about never doing such a thing.
So then...
I did solicit money for the lawsuits.
Mm-hmm. I see.
And I also asked people to give to the station.
Yes. So these people are just off the wall.
Well, if you could remember, we're going to try and be as specific as we can. So... specifically, what is the statement they're making that is off the wall, in your opinion?
Well, the whole basis for them taking a strong position that the local advisory board does not represent the interests of the station, that would be the general position that they're taking.
Well, okay, so the now there's the hourly announcement, but this is something, the hourly announcement talks about the funds. And their funds being shanghaied by the Pacifica National.
Right, but if you go to their site, friendsofkpfk.org, they make a kind of a blanket statement that this local advisory board has a long pattern of not reflecting the interests of the station, and that the
that's a fair statement, and it's quite true that the staff. That is presently at the station.
Not the entire staff, ever.
Well, that's clear.
Okay, but well, it's actually not so clear. They keep saying the near unanimous. But in any case, they do... Let me back up a little. When I originally joined the board, the local board, it was in the wake of the National having come down and dissolved the advisory board, because the advisory board had... It followed on the purging of several programmers of color for statements that the National felt were inflammatory, I think. I don't know the details of it, but there was a review process that existed at the time, a local review process, whereby programmers could appeal to the local board suspension decisions. That's, of course, been done away with for some time. But in any case, the local board found in favor of the programmers, and so the response of the National executive director at that time was to dissolve the local board, which it turns out is illegal because local board members have voting rights for directors and therefore are members of the corporation under California Corporation.
The National took over the local and dissolved it, and it was illegal to do that.
Correct.
Therefore, their suits were filed against illegal action.
The suits were not filed then. That was 1995. So I came on in the wake of that, when there were three members on the advisory board in addition to the staff rep. And I had been a volunteer in the newsroom for some time and had been training people in Internet skills at the time. And I'd actually donated a computer and an Internet access line because the management didn't want to pay for the $20 a month to give the newsroom access to the Internet in 1995. So I was doing that.
Well, if I might just make a closing statement, because I'm sure other people want to call in.
Well, no, actually, I'd like you to do what Mark Cooper didn't, and let me answer your question specifically, because there's a lot of history, and there's been a lot of prevention of it getting out, so I'm going to continue, thanks. So what happened after that was when I heard Ron Wilkins get taken off the air mid-program, I went in an email exchange with Mark Shubb about it, and I figured there had to be just some confusion going on. So I went to a local board meeting, and it happened to be a meeting at which they were opening up their membership. So I joined the board to see if I could help. And I tried for a while, and things seemed very strange. I'd get strange responses about things. You know, no, we can't deal with that. No, we can't do that. Then the following fall, this was 6 months after I joined, I found a website called radioforall.org/freepacifica, at which there was a bunch of documentation, including documents that were supposed to be reviewed by the local board the prior month and hadn't been. So at that point, I said, wait a sec, what's going on? Next, I found out from our national board member that what was going on was they were discussing in closed meetings of the national board the possible sale of WBAI, the station license. Now, that station license is in the their broadcast frequency is in the commercial part of the spectrum. So the license is worth, in 1996, it was estimated to be worth $90 million. It's probably more like $200 million now. And that fit in with what was called the five-year strategic plan at Pacifica, which was to do away with the volunteer-based, diverse, community, participatory, crazy quilt program schedule format and institute a daily, get rid of monthly shows, put in more daily shows, put in strip shows, and have more paid programmers. And I believe the idea of the sale was to fund that plan. Now, anybody who didn't agree with it was getting pushed out of the institution at the time. And so there was an attempt in 1997 to change the bylaws so that the board of directors controlled their own membership for the first time, a majority of their own membership, because they wanted to get this done, and there was some dissent. Now, that got pushed off. Beaten back by public pressure. But part of that was that I published an article letting people know that this was going on. Well, at that point, what I was doing was contradicting the interests of the management because I was challenging their ability to have full control of the station, that management being put in place by the national. When the carts say this is a local issue, what they're saying is decided by the local manager who was put in place by national. So then, after that, the station demanded that I be removed because I had just violated the gag rule, essentially, and told listeners what was happening at the station that they gave their money to. And these were radical transformations that were totally non-consensual. So over 150 people got removed. Now, the people who remained, some of them felt that my telling listeners about this represented a challenge to their interests. You can imagine that thereafter relationships were not warm and wonderful, but we continued to meet with them. I continued to try and work with them, and at the same time I continued to recruit people for the local board because I felt that if people knew, had seen what was going on, it didn't matter what political background they came from, they could see that something was very wrong, that there was essentially a takeover going on, and I persisted in that point of view. Now, I did not file suit. I did not organize a lawsuit until March of 1998, when abruptly the National Board withdrew the voting rights of staff members on local boards, because it was clear that that was meaningful. Why were they taking away the voting rights of staff members? And so I started researching it, and that's when I found out that LAB members were corporate members since they had voting rights for directors. And the following February, they, after a solicited opinion from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, where they asked, gee, is there anything illegal about our governance structure? And CPB responded, I think there is. I think you can't have lab members sitting on the Pacifica National Board simultaneously. They chose to change their bylaws to comply with that so that they elected their entire membership. That's illegal. You can't remove the voting rights of LAB members. Now, the station has, and the people who remain there, who are put there by the current manager, have always asserted that the role of the LAB was to serve them. But Federal Communications Act law says the role of the advisory board is to provide a mechanism for input into station affairs from the community. Now, their argument was, well, if you don't do what we like, we're not going to let you have any role in bringing the community in. I assert that I am not anti-KPFK or anti-Pacifica any more than I am anti-American, but I have a right to differ. I think I do have that right. And the reaction of the National Board was never to say, okay, here's the following process by which an issue gets resolved. It was always to attack and remove. And that's what happened in Berkeley, because after they took that vote to make themselves self-selecting, they then came in and made a number of changes, removing programmers, removing managers, without talking to the community first. And the staff did what the current staff is doing, went on the air repeatedly with carts. The difference was they gave them the audience detailed information. By a few months later, a memorandum came out from the treasurer to the chair. It got leaked. Actually, he sent it by accident to somebody in Media Alliance, a grassroots media organization, and it said, hey, when are we going to lock down, shut down KPFA and reprogram it? And I've looked into how much we could get for the license, and it's about $75 million. And that put the whole community in uproar. And when Dennis Bernstein read the, or played, I think, the news conference at which it was said on the air, they came, they brought security guards, or actually I don't know the details of that, but I think they brought the security guards in, and they removed him from the station and subsequently locked the staff out. First time in American broadcasting history a whole staff had been locked out by the owners. And again, they spent $500,000, but they wouldn't tell anybody about it because they'd closed their books back in 95 so that even their own union couldn't see what was going on. So anyhow, there were a lot of things going on, a lot of people being removed, and I happened by accident to be in this position to actually effectively dissent. And I thought that was part of the tradition. At no time was I unwilling to settle these cases or reason with them if they would share power. But the idea was, and incidentally, I don't want power over what happens at the institution. What I want is for there to be a clear process and open discussion of what goes on so that people can defend their interests at a unique institution that doesn't exist anywhere else in radio. Anyhow, I hope that was specific enough, but I can go on.
The closing comment that I would make, which is not really just a question, it's really an observation. I think on behalf of the subscribers, what is required here is a somewhat more objective outline of both parties' sides, because quite frankly, I'm just confused. What you just said sounds great, but I hear things from the other side that also are somewhat alarming and
could you be
concern.
Specific about what thing they've said?
Again, I'm confused, so I can't be specific.
Okay.
And that's the problem.
And
I like to think that I'm a reasonably intelligent guy at figuring out these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And you start digging into the documents, and people are making various claims. And the greatest concern I have is the division here just makes the station vulnerable to, let's call them, other corporate forces that might be out there one day that want to get their hands on these frequencies. And so we have to be very united. And so somebody else, perhaps a third party, has to emerge to tell the story. That would be all. I would just say I'm a little bit confused. I'm very concerned. I'm worried. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm going
okay,
to a lot of different sources.
I would suggest if you want to read about a paper about it by Robert McChesney or Edward Herman has a couple of papers
good.
On the Pacifica situation.
If he's gone to the websites, he's seen it. He's still having issues working it out. I agree with you, sir. I don't think you can grasp immediately all of what's going on.
Yeah,
that was the purpose of the resolution. Remember, the resolution that the staff is interpreting as an encroachment on their programming freedom says they should do a program during drive time with a moderated discussion with representatives from each side. So it's an attempt to actually inform you because, for example, during the last fund drive, the staff knew there were these lawsuits. They knew the executive director had fired the old attorneys who were trying to settle with us and hired Bill Clinton's attorney from the Lewinsky scandal, Greg Craig, and another very expensive law firm, and they ultimately settled. But the point is that they knew before they went on the air and asked you for money during the last fund drive that Pacifica wasn't paying their bills, and they didn't even have all the premiums they were promising you. So it is necessary to have a moderated and extensive discussion so that there can be enough back and forth so that listeners like yourself can ultimately make the decision.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Okay, David, it's we're 10 minutes over time here, and so we will do this. We will continue this discussion and this process, and all I can say as a summary for those who are confused by having all these years and years of intricate data thrust on you in a few minutes, I'm very happy about what's going on finally right now. Finally, and I'm a free speech man, and I've been here for a long time, so
and hopefully you'll be there a long time more.
Yeah, and I'm still here, and it looks like now that the Democratic forces are gaining ascendancy, I'll be here a little while longer.
One last thing, Roy.
Yeah.
Just because the Democratic forces are gaining ascendancy is a guarantee of nothing unless your listeners, like the listener who just called, decide to inform themselves and decide to involve themselves, because really, when you're talking about these five transmitters, they can reach one in five American homes. They have a net asset value of like $500 million.
Half a billion.
But the most important thing they have is the ability to affect people's consciousness and to challenge the consensus reality that most of media is constantly involved in cultivating, and to provide a voice for the voiceless, as they say. So people got to get themselves involved to turn this from an opening into a victory.
Thank you, David Adelson, chairman of the local advisory board of KPFK.
Thank you, Roy. Take care.
Bye.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA. Machinery for change, and it's here they got the
spiritual thirst. It's here the family's broken, and it's here the lonely say that the heart has got to open in a fundamental way. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Democracy is coming to the USA.